Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, AFR.net. You want to send us an email, the address is comments@AFR.net, comments@AFR.net. We are live, we're doing live radio here, broadcasting across the country on 182 stations, Walker.
That's right, 182.
182 radio stations that we own and operate, and we appreciate you listening. And if you're listening on the internet at or watching at Facebook or YouTube, just type in Today's Issues. And again, take advantage of the podcast at AFR.net. Ray Pritchard is with me, with us. Ray's in Kansas City, and we're in Tupelo, MS. And Steve Jurdahl, who hails from Northern California.
Originally, yes.
Originally. Northern or Central?
Northern. Well, it's considered
northern. There's an earthquake last night, didn't they, out there?
Yeah, I heard. I heard. I haven't heard from my folks, but yeah, they're still out there. Yeah, they've swarm of. It's nothing unusual for us out there, Northern California. I remember anything below a 5, you don't pay attention to. I mean, you note it, you move on.
Yeah, how do you note a 4.8? What happens?
You get pretty good at figuring out what they were that was about a 4, it was about a 5. I was pretty good at it.
Really?
There's three types of people in California in earthquakes. There's the people who have lived there like me a long time and been through tons of them. What happens when you feel an earthquake is you look around, you decide if it's time to move to the place where you're supposed to be in a doorway or under a desk or whatever. There's the people who've never been to California who, as soon as they feel the earth shaking, they freak and they don't know what to do and they look around and they're lost. And then there's
that would be me.
Yeah, and then there's the people who've been through the big ones in California. I haven't. They're the ones that, when they feel it shaking, immediately stand up, calmly walk to the place that they're supposed to be, in the doorway, under the desk, or whatever. But no,
There hasn't been a major earthquake in California since the one that hit the Bay Area.
Yeah,
is that right?
Loma Prieta 89 is about the last one that's been
in the World Series.
Yeah, that's
where were you?
I was in Portland, Oregon. I was in seminary at the time, and my folks' house is about 2 miles as the crow flies from Loma Prieta, where that earthquake happened.
The epicenter?
The epicenter.
Wow.
Their house shook. They lost some plates, but nothing, because their foundation, they're set on rock. Nothing happened to the house. The church that my dad was a pastor at, down maybe 20 miles, 30 miles further down, was not on built on as strong a foundation, and they lost some panes of glass. And, of course, you saw what happened up in San Francisco, which is a resettled, basically, it's refuse. It's San Francisco is a built-up island of garbage, basically. There's a lot, come to think of it.
They use that on the advertising for the convention.
That's how you get them there, huh?
Oh, man.
That's how you get tourists there, right?
Yeah, but the liquefaction is what they call it. The sand, when it moves, it liquefies, and it there's just nothing underneath the structures. But, yeah, that was the last one.
All right. Well, get us started, Steve. What do you got in the news here?
Well, let's talk State of the Union.
Claps for you. I've got everybody.
Claps.
I need two more people on our staff.
That's right.
Sandy said one. This is Nancy. We're predicting how many times Nancy Pelosi will clap tonight. And I'm not talking about like getting up and clapping 10 times at one sitting. I'm talking about individual times of clapation.
Times of clapation.
Yes. So Sandy said one. Fred said one. Ray said two. Walker said five. I said four. You say?
I'm going to say six. I'm going to say six. Because
somebody's going to have to count this tonight.
Yeah.
You're going to say six. Okay. And Brent, how many are you? Brent's our producer.
I'm saying three.
Three. Okay. Him
walking in.
Walking in.
Maybe if he got on like the DACA subject.
Yep.
DACA. Maybe there. Mm-hmm. And then when he leaves.
Gotcha.
Okay. Leaving and coming in or – County will certainly be clapping when he comes in. So, yeah, let's stay with six. But if he trips, what if he trips?
They'll clap for that, too.
For that.
That's right.
All right.
Well, we've been hearing a bunch of people talking about. I wanted to play a little bit of what we expect to hear tonight. This is Kellyanne Conway on what we expect to hear from the president tonight during his State of the Union speech, cut three.
He's going to call for an end to the politics of resistance, retribution, and call for more comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y, and also compromise. And is going to point out a couple of examples where this has actually happened. But I think that they should listen to the message and not always just look at the messenger. And I think a little bit more on policy, a lot less on politics, a little bit more on principle, a lot less on palace intrigue, and you'll be able to hear the words that are stated.
Okay, so that's what Kellyanne Conway from the White House says is going to happen. I want to let you hear also what Maxine Waters, she's previewing the speech tonight as well. And this is what she thinks she's going to hear tonight from President Trump, cut five.
I don't even know why he wants to come and give the State of the Union. The State of the Union under him has not been good. And so he is not worthy of being listened to. I don't know why anybody want to pay attention to anything that he has to say. I'm not looking forward to his State of the Union. And I hope that people will turn the television off.
Well, there
is this
you go.
Between martinis at a jazz bar?
It might be.
Where did the music come from?
I think some group put that together.
Gotcha.
Some group put that together. But yeah, she said, so that's her preview of the speech.
Bar. Is she going?
I don't know.
What's interesting is she encouraged folks to cut off the TV and not watch it, but is she going to go? That's kind of hypocritical to say the American people can't watch it, but I'm going to go.
I don't know.
So we'll have to see.
Well, here's the big debate.
Let Ray comment here. He's not a podcast.
Well, if you listen to what she said, she's not going to be there, right? But it'd be pretty unusual for a congresswoman not to come to the president's State of the Union. So what do you think, Steve? You think she'll be there?
You know, I bet she doesn't. I bet she stays out. I bet she decides that she's going to – I bet she doesn't go. That's what I guess. The big thing, though, Ray, what they're talking about now isn't so much the speech. It's the rebuttal. And
right.
As you know, they have tapped Stacey Abrams, who was the failed candidate in the Atlanta or the Georgia governor's race, to make the Democrat response after the speech. Now, it's February, which is Black History Month. Pardon me?
It's what?
February.
Have you ever heard that before, Walker?
That it's February?
Yeah, February.
What did I say?
You February.
February.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
When you're trying to report the news really fast before anybody interjects.
Sorry, that's
Feb.
It's February.
February. You're not in Northern California anymore, brother.
It's okay, Steve.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. I'm splitting hairs. I don't know. Go ahead, Steve. Continue.
I'm struggling through a little bit.
February. Yeah. I think you're mocking me, but.
No, okay.
It's hard to say that once you start thinking about it.
Well,
go ahead, Steve.
Okay, it's
March
second,
is a lot easier.
It's the second month of the year, which is Black History Month.
Mm-hmm, right.
And Stacey Abrams, of course, would be the first African-American Democrat woman to give the response. But so today we heard that Bernie Sanders is going to give a separate Democrat response, which has upset the social justice universe to no end.
Right.
Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont, not a Democrat, and he is going to deliver his own State of the Union response after Stacey Abrams, I believe. Many people saying that the old white man is upstaging the upcoming young black politician, which is totally inappropriate during February.
I got it in your head.
Isn't it true? You're living there rent-free right now.
Go ahead, Ray.
Isn't it true that the most thankless job in the universe, I don't know, Republican or Democrat, is to give the response to the State of the Union, right? It's awful. The setting is awful. The big speech has already been done.
Even
right.
for
so
Republicans.
You know, if in football terms, you're behind by three touchdowns before you ever get started. So, and I'm also thinking to myself, I'm sure Stacey Abrams will do fine in a hard situation. But come on, won't Bernie Sanders be a lot more fun to listen to than Stacey Abrams? I mean, really?
Well, I don't know. I've never heard Stacey Abrams talk much. I will say this, though. You're right. The stage for the State of the Union is so,
grand.
Majestic and grand.
Yes.
And then I remember one time, poor Bobby Jindal, The governor.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Oh,
the,
yeah.
Governor of Louisiana, a good man and a good Christian conservative.
Yes. Wonderful guy.
He was supposed to give the speech after Obama, and Obama gives the State of the Union and before the Congress in the halls of the Capitol building.
Yeah.
You know, and then Bobby Jindal comes on, the governor of Louisiana, who looks like he's in a basement somewhere.
Yeah, giving the speech.
Right.
Remember, the lighting was dark and.
Yeah, it was like the air being let out of the balloon.
Yeah, it was just
If it's so unpopular, I'm not sure why everybody's fighting for it, because Kamala Harris is going to be giving a pre-buttal to the speech. She's going to be broadcasting on Facebook Live prior to the speech. In her remarks, she will be pushing back on the president's expected message of division, highlighting the importance of speaking truth.
What this is, obviously, is that, you know, Stacey Abrams, I don't agree with her politics, the gubernatorial candidate there for the Democrats in Georgia who lost narrowly, I think. But the woman's been assigned to give the response, and now all these Democrat presidential nominees are jumping in there to interfere with her moment. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
Don't you think so, Ray?
Yeah. You know, it's a tough things that she's got to do, and then now Bernie Sanders comes out, and Bernie's just more enjoyable. He's a much better known figure. Plus, with Bernie, you literally never know what he's going to say, right? you watch part for the entertainment value there. So I can understand why they're a little upset, but it's anybody's ballgame, right?
You never know what he's going to say, except there are a few staples he's going to have, and that is
give us some free stuff.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, he's gonna be for fair taxing, making the rich pay their fair share, and
if you think about it, the Democrats have been sliding to his end of the spectrum. I mean, he was talking about free college tuition.
He's a moderate now.
Everything in the Democrat Party. So I think he's trying to stake
his. That's how far they've gone, folks. Yeah.
I think he's going to just speak up to say, "Hey, remember me? These were my ideas." Right. So
You're almost better off, whether it be a Democrat or Republican, you're almost better off waiting till the next day and then holding some kind of event, like town hall event with a rebuttal.
Well, it at least gives you the appearance of having listened and responding to the speech. I mean, how much of a rebuttal can you give if it comes 5 minutes after the speech? You can't fact check it.
Yeah, but the Democrats know every morning they get up, whatever Trump's for, we're against.
I know.
Yeah, because remember before Justice Kavanaugh was appointed or nominated, they had the signs, the fill in the blank signs. We're against, and then a blank for the next Supreme Court justice. So it did, to your point, Dad, it didn't matter who, what the issue was or who they picked. They were against them from the get go.
That's right. That's what it's
going to be. Next story, Steve.
Well, you know, in the aftermath of New York passing its abortion bill, and then the Virginia governor talking about how their bill that was tabled would have gone even farther, allowing babies that were born after abortion, that were born alive after trying to be aborted, that they would consult and see what they were going to do about those. The members of the Senate, the Republican members of the Senate, specifically Ben Sasse from Nebraska, has introduced a bill that is called the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which provides protections for any infants born alive after an attempted abortion procedure. Now, this is a baby that they attempt to abort, but somehow it's born and it's alive. So what do you do with it? Well, the measure says we're going to do life-saving measures, try to make sure that it survives. Patty Murray of Washington, the Democrat, showed up to object to the bill, saying, no, we don't want to save the life of that baby.
Is that what she said?
Well, she claimed that the legislation is unnecessary because there are already legal prohibitions on infanticide. Well, she's admitting that it's infanticide. Two, she's opposing the bill.
Well, she's right about that, though, don't you think? I mean, in the sense that isn't it illegal to kill a baby once they're born?
Well, sure it is. Sure it is. Okay. And it's always been illegal. So if that's the case, then why not just pass the bill last night? Isn't it true the Democrats are showing their true colors?
But the whole case of whether or not it is legal or not was brought into question by Northam, Governor Northam of Virginia, who said once the baby was born, if it was an attempted abortion, but it was born alive, the Governor Northam said they'd set the baby in, make it comfortable, and then consult with the mother and the doctor of whether they were going to kill the baby that was sitting on the table being made comfortable.
Right.
Or not. Whether they're going to kill the born alive infant or not. So that kind of calls into question whether or not there are enough laws to protect infanticide. Patty Murray seems to think there are, but she comes up and she stops this bill, which would say, no, if a baby is born alive, we're going to protect it. And the Democrats in the Senate, U.S. Senate, no. They can't, even give that.
To me, the scariest part is that our neighbors – you know, hypothetically speaking, are continue electing people like this. You know, our fellow Americans continue electing Democrats who don't want to oppose babies being killed outside the womb.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these aren't, you know, non-elected politicians. These are people who are being voted on by the majority of people in their district or in their state. So that should be concerning.
And this does put the Democrats in a bad way trying to answer this question, because they don't really, I'm surprised that Northam got into it, although he had to, the bill was there, right? That he had to decide whether he was going to sign or not, which mimicked the New York bill, which allows for abortion up to the baby coming down the birth canal. Now, they'll say there are conditions on that. They'll say life of the mother or mental
life emotional, or health of the mother.
Yeah, and health of the mother can be anything. We know that. So that was the point. But, this puts the Democrats in a just like when you say to Republicans or to pro-lifers, what about a girl who's been raped? You think you need it? Are you going to force her to have that baby? Okay, that puts people who are pro-life in a difficult situation trying to answer that question, okay? Now, don't misunderstand me, folks. Our life begins at conception, and no baby deserves to die because they're a product of rape. But it's still, it's a loser with the general. My position that I've just expressed is not a winner with the general public. The general public would say, no, you shouldn't force the girl to have an abortion, carry through with the pregnancy. So my point is that's a hard question for our side to answer to the satisfaction of the general public. You follow me here? Conversely, the Democrats don't want to talk about this, because once you have to start talking about killing a baby when it's about to be born, no, who wants to talk about? Are they in favor of that? That's barbarism. I mentioned the general public. The general public understands that's barbarism.
Yeah.
Now the gray area,
and clearly
the gray area there is in the middle, right? But what it does, what this does, is it forces people to have to answer the question to themselves: well, when does life really begin, and when is it worthy of legal protection? Go ahead.
Well, one of the points that Steve was making earlier is that when the Virginia governor was talking about this, he wasn't even talking about the case of, say, at 9 months and the baby is in, you know, the woman's in labor, and should that child be aborted or not. He was even talking about more extreme than that. The baby has been born, right?
Right.
The baby has come out of the birth canal. The baby has been born. It's separate from the mother. Keep the baby comfortable. Then we'll decide what. That is barbarism times two, which is why, by the way, I really hope the president tonight brings up the abortion issue and lays it out just like that. Because the great majority of Americans across the political spectrum, when they think about what the governor of Virginia was talking about, they are repulsed by that, because everybody knows you should not kill a baby that has been born.
And I would agree with y'all the assessment that abortion, especially late-term abortion, is wildly unpopular. But I just wonder why these folks keep getting elected. I mean, this is not a Hillary Clinton has lobbied for third-term abortions for years, and these folks keep getting elected. So,
well, that's because half of the American public is what they would define as pro-choice and or pro-abortion, we would say, and half of the country is pro-life.
Right.
So, you know, that's just where it is. So,
with regard to Tim, you were saying it's a difficult thing for Christians when the rape or incest type of rare thing. It is rare. We're talking on the edge.
I know.
Rare things.
Well, so are third trimester abortions.
But here's the deal. And maybe I'm stepping out a little bit from the traditional pro-life side here, or the moderate side. But even in cases of rape and incest, it's a tragic thing that's happened to the woman. And never should have happened. The man should be found. The man should be punished. But it's not the fault of the baby.
I know.
It's still murder.
And there are adoption options available to that woman. If she can hang in there for 9 months.
No, I agree with you on that. I think that's the pro-life perspective for sure. All I'm saying to you is this. We're not talking among just us evangelical Christians here or conservative Catholics. I'm telling you, in the general American public, it's somewhere in the middle there, because the general American public, if you say to them a 15-year-old girl was raped, do you believe she's your daughter is 15 and she was raped, do you believe she needs to be forced to carry to term the baby? They would say to you, no. I'm just telling you. That's what
that's what they'll say.
Huh? Am I right, Ray?
That's right. You're exactly right. That is what they will say. Sure.
Yeah. That doesn't mean it's right, but that's where they're going to say some of the public is.
And they're going to use that against you. That's why, as conservative a state as Mississippi is, the most pro-life state in the country, arguably, maybe with Iowa, we couldn't pass the personhood amendment here.
Right.
It failed. I don't know what it failed by, but the general American public are never, and I don't think, ever going to go for a pro-life bill that doesn't allow for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. I'm just telling you. You may disagree with that. I'm just telling you.
That's a political judgment. I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
Well, I think.
But if you could outlaw, excuse me, Walker.
Yeah.
If you could outlaw everything but those.
I think you're right on a statewide amendment. I think that has proven to be the case. But as far as legislation, where your elected representatives in the state pass legislation, Mississippi did pass, it's still hung up in the court system, a 15-week ban on abortion. Anything past 15 weeks, no matter what the situation. Right. So
Do that, or the heartbeat.
Yeah,
those are reasonable things.
Yeah, when you have when you have voters actually going to cast an amendment, a ballot, a vote on an amendment, it does. People get hung up on the rape and incest case, but as far as your elected representatives, in some states they've passed it with no exceptions.
When you look at the other end of the spectrum, though, the born alive part, it is equally rare. But if you look at the testimony from the Kermit Gosnell case, for example, you will find instances of babies that were born alive and were crying, but it denied service.
Right. No, I know.
So it happens. So this is
We just need to keep promoting the pro-life position, that is, and the biblical position that life begins at conception.
Yes, and our laws need to reflect that.
Right, and fighting for the right to life of unborn babies. And, you know, we're going to win some, and we're going to lose some, but we have to keep fighting. Ray, thanks so much for being on with us today, brother.
Thank you, Tim.
All right, Walker, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Steve?
My pleasure.
May you be earthquake-free today.
May I be earthquake-free in this February.
All right. So thanks to Brent Creeley and Fred Jackson for his contribution. We'll see you tomorrow, folks. Have a great day.